Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is April 19th, 2023. We're here for our last three oral arguments on our calendar this morning. I'm Tracy Smith, and I'm joined by my colleagues, Judge Klopacki and Judge Bryan. This case is A22-0897, State of Minnesota versus James Michael Anderson. This Zoom session is being recorded, and an audio recording will appear later on our website. Each of you has 15 minutes for your principal argument and 5 minutes rebuttal for the appellant. If you could please, at the start of your principal argument, state your name, the party you represent on the record. The clock is visible, and we are ready for appellant.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rebecca Ireland. I represent the appellant, James Anderson. This direct appeal presents a Fourth Amendment claim involving a warrantless car search following a routine traffic stop. The officers searched the car in which Mr. Anderson was a passenger after they saw a baggie of cannabis and a pill bottle in the car and had noticed suspect movements of the rear passengers when the car first pulled over. Because these facts fail to establish probable cause under the automobile exception, the district court erred in its suppression ruling. This court should reverse. I want to acknowledge at the outset, as this court is well aware, there's been a significant change in the cannabis laws as of 2019, and there have been a few subsequent non-precedential decisions of this court regarding the automobile exception involving cannabis, one of which is up at the Supreme Court now, of course. With this in mind, I would like to first address the legal standard that applies and whether this court must follow prior automobile search decisions that were decided under now abrogated marijuana laws. Importantly, this court is not bound by prior decisions like Thiel.
Ms. Ireland, if I can jump in, I understand the argument you're going to make about why Thiel related to the old statute and may not have the same kind of binding effect. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to clarify something at the outset. Assuming we decide to apply, and I don't know if it's Thiel or Thiel. Assuming we decide to apply Thiel, are you conceding that we would be affirming in that instance, or do you have an argument that you'd like to make? And I don't mean to sidetrack you and make you do that now, but I'm just curious if you're going to make an argument that even applying Thiel, there would be no probable cause, or do you concede that if we apply Thiel, we have to affirm?
I do not believe that you would have to affirm in doing nothing to Thiel, because this court has already addressed stops and the automobile exception as it did in Ferguson involving cannabis. And there was no overturning of Thiel. So that signals that perhaps this court is reading something in Thiel that is not dispositive, leaving the case untouched. And I think there is some confusion. Many courts and litigants cite Thiel as creating a very bright line per se rule, but obviously this court did not discern any such bright line rule in Ferguson.
Yeah, and I think that you're right that there are cases that, at least two, that use that terminology even per se, but I think it's unusual for this court on a Fourth Amendment type of decision to say this fact alone, bright line, is enough. So I think I'd be comfortable saying that there isn't a bright line rule, but my question is more, and I don't mean to, again, sidetrack you, but when I say applying Thiel, what I mean is if we conclude the possibility of marijuana is enough because of how Thiel was decided, that is there some other argument you're making on probable cause? It's something negated that, or that itself isn't even enough because there's other law predating Thiel that would support something like that.
Certainly, even applying those cases to the extent that they are relevant to a Fourth Amendment determination, which is, as you have suggested, inherently eschews any kind of bright line rule, this court would need not affirm because the issue is whether, essentially, given the facts of the case, including the cannabis, which we do not know if it's marijuana or hemp, rises to the level of allowing a reasonably prudent person to determine that this car contained contraband. And the facts of this case do not allow that conclusion. I would concede that, of course, the presence of cannabis in our post-semi-legalization setting is still relevant, but that alone does not establish probable cause. There needs to be something more, additional factors. And we do have additional factors here. And as I argue in my brief, even with those circumstances, we don't get above the suspicion level into probable cause.
Hey, thank you. I didn't mean to take you off of where you were trying to go, which is to tell us why we should question that application of Thiel. So I don't know if there are other follow-ons, but if not, I am interested in your argument there.
Thank you. I think the important point is that this court need not feel bound by Thiel to the extent that it establishes some kind of per se or bright line rule as it relates to marijuana, because we now have a new legal structure, and the legal scheme that Thiel was decided on is null and void. There can be no dispute about that. Some cannabis is now legal. So with that in mind, and having already acknowledged that the detection of some cannabis is relevant.
So we're back to the old standard, totality of the circumstances, in your view?
Precisely. I do believe that the appropriate test and approach that this court should apply is the one I discern it as having applied in Torgerson, which is a individualized, very fact-driven, case-specific totality of the circumstances test, which asks, is it reasonable to conclude that this car, this particular car, contained evidence of a crime? And here, the four observations of the officers that the district court noted in its decision and relied upon are not enough to get above mere suspicion into the probable cause determination to allow the warrantless search. So I can turn to the fact-specific analysis now. There are the four factors that the court found and addressed, I will address hopefully succinctly in turn. The first is that the officers observed the vehicle at a so-called problem address or a prior crime, high crime area. Here, the officers saw the Camry in the alleyway of an address that was associated with a prior arrest for narcotics and stolen vehicles. But importantly, the officers observed nothing suspicious while doing that surveillance. Further fatal, there's no link in the record here between that Camry and the prior arrest at this address. There's no nexus between these occupants who had visited this address and those prior arrests. The car didn't register to that address. The occupants weren't found to have lived at that address. So that fact holds little weight in the analysis. Then after the officers tailed the car and pulled it over following a valid driving infraction, there were some short-lived furtive movements in the rear seat by the rear passengers. And now movements within a car of occupants can be suspicious, and certainly generally it is, but it doesn't necessarily rise to the level of probable cause as the Fourth Amendment requires. And here, the Flowers case is particularly instructive, and I discussed the facts of that case in my brief. There, the driver engaged in far more egregious and extensive furtive movements in a high crime area, I would note, that lasted well over a minute. The officers not only had to employ an air horn multiple times and repeatedly demand that the car pull over, but the officers noted movements that were consistent with someone reaching for or storing a gun.
Here the furtive movements were not on the part of the driver, but on passengers. Is that right?
That's right. It's the two rear passengers that were noted to have moved in their seats, I think a bit forward, back, side to side. And importantly, those movements did not last long. The car here also, unlike Flowers, immediately pulled over. There was no delay. And the movements didn't continue. There was no other suspicious movements that the officers detected. The only thing they detected after that was the baggie of cannabis in the front of the car and one prescription pill bottle on the floor of the car.
And appellant was where in the car?
The rear passenger side seat.
Thank you.
Yes. And the cannabis was in the front near an ashtray that's kind of near the center console, near the radio area. And then the pill bottle was on the floor near the front passenger. And I've already talked a little bit about why I think.
Okay, I'm sorry, just to So there are two passengers in back. Is that correct?
There are four people in the car. So
thank you. And two in front and the cannabis and the empty prescription pill bottle were both in the front.
That's right.
And the, okay, thank you.
That's right. And I just would note, I'm not able to see the clock. Okay, now I can see the clock. I just wanted to note that. I've talked a little bit about why the cannabis alone doesn't rise to the level of probable cause. And I would note that when we look at traffic stop cases, what officers typically do in this scenario is they do further investigation. They inquire of the driver. They ask about the cannabis. They ask about what else is in the car. Here, I would concede there was a basis for further investigation, which is, of course, needs to be supported by reasonable articulable suspicion, which is a lower standard than probable cause. But we don't get to that next level of probable cause. And the pill bottle, frankly, does nothing to reify the suspicion here.
It appears in the order, it says it doesn't go to the argument you're making now, but it says that the officer noticed an empty pill container at the feet of the male passenger seated in the back seat. Is that wrong, or maybe that's correct?
That might actually be an error. I believe that the officer noted it was on the front, and I can address that in rebuttal and sure. Look that up if that would be okay. Helpful. Okay. But I do want to address the pill bottle, because here I do think the district court erred in its legal conclusion that this contributed to probable cause based on the officer saying that in his training and experience, sometimes people put drugs in prescription pill bottles. That might be so, but we know that training and experience is not a talismanic phrase. And here it requires a wholly speculative leap to discern anything suspicious about this particular bottle. It would be different if there were 10 bottles, 20 bottles, something more. And frankly, the Munoz case that the district court cited in support of the pill bottle adding to the suspicion is off point and doesn't support that proposition whatsoever. That was a wholly different case that involved myriad factors, including an informant's tip, knowledge of the driver, and did not involve pill bottles. So when taken together, these facts are insufficient to get above that mere suspicion that did allow perhaps another incremental intrusion upon the car and its occupants. But the officer just jumped straight to a search, which requires the heightened standard of probable cause. And here there's insufficient indicia of a crime. And the officer perhaps should have continued to investigate until such suspicion was dispelled, or there had been that additional indicia of criminal activity to support a warrantless search. And I would like to add, seeing that I have a bit more time unless there's further questions.
I do, if I could probe a little bit more on the distinction, I think, or the characterization of Thiel. I agree that we have referred to that case or cited that case. But I'm not sure I think it's correct to say that Thiel somehow stands for a proposition that's different from a totality of the circumstances test. It seems to me that that is an example of when the totality of the circumstances would support probable cause, but I don't think it gets rid of the totality of the circumstances test, right?
You know, you raise a really interesting question and conundrum that I've really wrestled with. The extent to which these cases that parties often rely upon for a bright line rule, and courts, to be frank, whether they really do establish a per se rule. And I think that there's colorable disagreement about this. In my brief, I moved forward from the place of how these cases are typically relied upon by courts and parties. And I think it's fair to say that courts and parties rely on these cases as establishing the rule of law that if an officer detects by sight or smell what they believe is marijuana in a car, that establishes probable cause. I think it's fair to say
that it may be that It may be that that's an example, and it's one of the things, there are probably lots of examples of things that will always or almost always establish probable cause, right? But as I look at Teal or Thiel, it does cite to the totality of the facts and circumstances that would lead a reasonable officer to entertain an honest and strong suspicion. So it's not like it's setting itself up as separate. It's something that we've attributed to it after the fact. And there's even a part of Teal that I think is the thing that we look to, that we've cited, that itself is citing another case, the Shinseng case, see also Hansen. So it's almost as if Teal isn't doing the work that you or maybe our court has attributed to it. It's really Shinseng and Hansen that first did that work, right? The quote from Hansen is, "The discovery of the marijuana cigarette clearly justified the further search of the car." Shinseng is cited for the proposition in Teal that the discovery of marijuana in a car gives law enforcement probable cause to search for more anywhere in the car one might reasonably expect to find it. So it's Teal itself isn't doing that work. That's citing other cases, and we sort of attribute something to Teal. But do you believe then that we, in looking at this and analyzing this, are presented with a dichotomy, a choice? One side is this sort of statement of law, marijuana, that's enough, or totality of the circumstances. Is that even our choice, or is it really, when you look at it, it's always been a totality?
I appreciate your question, and I would permit myself leave to respond to it, because there's a couple questions within that I think are really interesting. First of which is that I do think it's a fair reading that Thiel itself can be read as not necessarily establishing a bright line rule, but that parties and litigants have subsequently attributed to that case such rule. And as you noted, Thiel does rely on Shinseng, which the Supreme Court has in Burbach in 2005, I believe, said, you don't understand this case as we understand it. Parties have misattributed a bright line rule to this case. And Shinseng, it was the odor of alcohol. And the state there said, well, you know, we know based on Shinseng that the odor of alcohol always establishes probable cause to search a car under the automobile exception. The Supreme Court said, no, you've misunderstood that case. It is always going to be an individualized case-specific inquiry. So to your point, you know, I think that your reading of Thiel is entirely plausible, that the Thiel case itself does not and cannot set out a bright line rule. But to the extent that it has subsequently come to stand for that proposition, that's what I'm addressing in my brief, if that makes sense. Thank you. I will respond to Judge Smith's question and rebuttal.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Thomas Raggetts. I'm an assistant Ramsey County attorney, and I represent respondent, state of Minnesota, in this matter. There's two possible issues before this court. The first is, should this or does this court even have to overturn precedent? And the second is, if you're going to reach the merits, was there a probable cause here? And I'd like to start with the first question, and I'm going to be sort of winging it here because I'm caught a little off guard by appellant's argument. In appellant's brief repeatedly asked this court to overturn precedent. And appellant now seems to be saying, well, you don't actually have to overturn precedent. Everyone since Thiel has misread it. But that's an argument I'm hearing for the first time today.
Well, I mean, to be fair, it's a point that I sort of pushed in my first question, but perhaps I can ask it this way. Do you think that there are ever observations of conduct or observations of something that will always be probable cause, no matter what?
I do, Your Honor. I think a bright line rule is not incompatible with the totality of the circumstances test, because there are some circumstances that will simply always meet that test. And while appellant was arguing, I was trying to think of one, and the best I could come up with is, if you see hand grenades in a car, that's a bright line rule that you can search the car.
Well, I don't know that it has to be like a grenade launcher or something, but if you observe criminal conduct inside a vehicle, it seems like that could be probable cause, that there might be evidence of that conduct somewhere, whether it's possession of something of contraband or it's some other offense. If a police officer observes the criminal conduct itself, it seems not too difficult to then say there might be evidence of what the police officer just observed in the car, right? So maybe an observation of a crime could potentially always be probable cause that of that crime, right?
Yes, Your Honor, I 100% agree with that. And I think that's what Thiel, and it's not just Thiel, says about the odor of marijuana. And I think it's important here that it's not just Thiel. I filed a supplemental authority letter on Monday, which I hope you got. And it cites the Schultz case from the Minnesota Supreme Court. And in Schultz, the Minnesota Supreme Court said the smell of the odor of marijuana provided the basis for a proper warrantless search of the passenger compartment of the vehicle. Bright line rule. I've also cited the United States Supreme Court's decision in U.S. v. Johns, where they say after the officers detected the distinct odor of marijuana, they have probable cause to believe the vehicle contained contraband. And then, of course, there's Thiel, which this court has on numerous occasions interpreted as basically saying once you smell marijuana, you can search. And I'd refer this court specifically to the Grissom decision, which is fairly recent. Judge Smith was on that panel. In that case, this court rejected the argument that the new hemp law or the 2019 hemp law had somehow made Thiel no longer good law. And as I said, if you look at appellant's brief and my brief, there are at least six cases since 2019 that have applied this precedent. So the first question is, does this court have to overrule precedent? In appellant's brief, appellant candidly acknowledged that it had to, and this court shouldn't. I mean, it's well established this court follows precedent. This court is an error-correcting court, as it often says. Clearly, it wasn't error here for Judge Awesome to follow precedent. It would be disturbing if he didn't.
Right. But I mean, I think if the argument is, can this court acknowledge that a statute has abrogated prior precedent, you'd agree we can do that, right? Even under the most narrow error correcting role that we might have, to the extent that we're looking at, does a statute change the law?
Well, Your Honor, appellant hasn't cited any precedent. And I'm not aware of any precedent directly says that. The case law is generally quite point blank. This court doesn't overrule precedent. And there's a reason to leave that for the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court could certainly do that here if it doesn't in the Torgerson decision that was argued earlier this month. But even accepting for the sake of argument that there could be a case where the legislature purposefully and directly and obviously passed a statute to overrule precedent, and this court could acknowledge that, that's not the situation here. Again, we're talking about not a law from last year, but from 2019. There have been numerous cases since then that have applied the law despite the statute. The statute doesn't say marijuana is legal, so can't search a car now. The statute makes some hemp legal, but marijuana is still illegal in a car. Even a petty amount of marijuana is illegal in a car. Judge Awesome cites that statute on page 5, I think it is, of his order, which is an appellant's addendum. The Supreme Court has rejected the argument that the decriminalization of marijuana means you can no longer search a car if you smell marijuana. That's the Ortega case that appellant cites in her brief, his brief. So the mere fact that maybe now there's an innocent explanation for the activity doesn't mean that Thiel's no longer good law. I mean, anytime you see a gun in a car, could be a toy gun. That white powder you saw in the car, maybe it's a cutting agent. Maybe it's not cocaine. None of that means you can't search the car under the probable cause standard, which just requires a fair probability. It doesn't require certainty. So 2019's statute did not abrogate Thiel or directly contradict Thiel in any way. No court has held that it did in the many cases that have come up since then. And so that's my pitch for this court, following precedent as it always does and leaving it to the Supreme Court to decide whether Thiel is still good law. And again, it's not just Thiel, it's the Minnesota Supreme Court Schultz decision, it's the US Supreme Court decision I've cited. And I'll rely on Grissom, I guess, to the extent that any further argument is needed on
Since you refer to Grissom, maybe you can take a moment and redress Torgerson, which is also an unpublished decision that seems to be slightly different.
Torgerson is somewhat of a mystery because Torgerson cites Teal, but then simply ignores it. It doesn't even acknowledge that Teal sets out a bright line rule, as many other courts have acknowledged. It just ignores it and goes straight to totality of the circumstances, which is perhaps why the Supreme Court has granted review on Torgerson. I've read the briefs in that case, and it seems highly unlikely to me that Torgerson is going to survive Supreme Court review. We'll see what happens there, but that would be a reason for this court to continue applying the law as it currently stands, and then we'll see in Torgerson what the court does. But Torgerson doesn't do what appellant's doing today and saying, well, Teal's been misread by other courts. Teal doesn't really stand for a bright line rule. All the cases that have cited Teal were wrong. It just ignores it and goes straight to the totality of the circumstances.
I have a question about what you think the holding of Teal is and its application in these other cases, because you really bring it down to a single factor. I mean, Grissom itself discussed other factors, evasiveness, et cetera. When I look at Teal, it talks about a strong, overwhelming odor, asked whether there is marijuana, the appellant handed a ceramic smoking pipe that was a small amount, trooper believed that couldn't account for the strong odor, et cetera. I mean, why does that case stand for the proposition in all cases that odor of marijuana is sufficient? Considering that it cites the correct law of the totality of the circumstances.
Unfortunately, I did not read Teal this morning because this is an argument that appellant doesn't make in the brief. So I wasn't prepared for an argument that everyone since Teal has read it wrong. But I think an important point here is it's not just Teal. Again, there's the U.S.
Well, who's everyone? I mean, you know, you said Grissom. Grissom had multiple factors at issue.
Well, there have been at least six cases cited in the briefs that have applied Teal to say smell of marijuana is enough for a search.
And that was the only factor that was at issue in those cases?
Not in all of them, but they all cite Teal as a bright line rule case. As I mean, I'm not aware of any case that has said Teal just says there's one factor. But let's ignore Teal. Even if Teal didn't exist, we'd still have Schultz from the Minnesota Supreme Court that says once the officer smelled marijuana, there was a basis for a search.
Were there any other facts at issue there, circumstances?
Nope.
Because a holding derives from the circumstances of the case, not just a statement about it. And so I'm wondering whether I'm not familiar enough with the facts of that case to know whether there are any other factors that the odor contributed to a totality of the circumstances that justify it.
Schultz is essentially a one-page decision that says the smell of marijuana justified the search. It's a 1978 case.
I like the fact that we can now sort of fact check each other in real time. And as you're talking, I went and looked at Schultz, and it does talk about an officer claim standing by the driver's window. He could smell the marijuana, which was wrapped in plastic bags inside grocery bags placed on the floor by the passenger's feet. Defendant, while admitting that one could smell marijuana through the plastic bags if one got close to them, denied that one could smell it from where the officer was standing. So the issue is whether the officer was telling the truth. And so it seems to be slightly different than a bright line rule that if there's marijuana, therefore there's probable cause. And it seems a little different to the extent that we're talking about a large quantity. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, a large quantity of something, the officer presumably couldn't tell what it was if it's wrapped in plastic from the window. But the case says, and I'm quoting, if the officer, I'm not quoting now, the question is what the officers believe. But the court essentially says, if the officer was telling the truth about the smell of marijuana, then the officer properly conducted a search. So ergo, the smell of marijuana justifies a search, which again is also what the United States Supreme Court said in the case I've cited. And again, this is a completely new argument. I've not seen this argument before, and I'm not aware of any case that discusses a claim that Thiel has been misread, Schultz has been misread. There isn't a bright line rule. Even if you smell marijuana, there might be circumstances under which you can't search. No case.
Well, it's just that the bright line rule you're attributing to a Minnesota Court of Appeals decision of Thiel, and the one that you finally got to that it seems like is smell only, was that a Supreme Court decision?
Yes, that's Minnesota Supreme Court. It cited my letter. Again, this is the first time appellant has argued that Thiel was wrongly interpreted, has been wrongly interpreted. If you look at
I think in fairness, we're questioning what you're saying that has been the interpretation of it. Because when I look at other cases, there tend to be more than one fact, and even Thiel had more than one fact.
Right. Okay. Well, so that's not what appellant argued, but if this court is questioning that, then I'm citing you to the two cases I've cited in my supplemental authority letter. With 3 minutes left, I would like to get to the totality of the circumstances, because I don't think that is a close case here. There are four of them. I'm not arguing that any of the first three alone are enough, but you can't just say, well, that's a red herring, so you can ignore it. You have to consider the totality of the circumstances. And here we have what the judge found was a problem property with past narcotics arrest that they're driving away from. You've got the furtive gestures, and Judge Awesome's order here is quite careful and detailed and well-written. And he says they're moving around inside the vehicle, and the officer reasonably inferred they might be concealing contraband or preparing to flee. You've got the empty pill bottle near defendant's feet, and appellant has never claimed that is a clearly erroneous factual finding. And then you've got the suspected marijuana, which is near the ashtray in the center part of the car. So when you take
what about the statements in this initial encounter? I understand that's not in the district court's order, but is there anything about that encounter, but you know, with the driver that you were arguing adds to what we're looking at here?
No, Your Honor, the judge didn't say there's anything besides those four things, so that's what we're relying on here. Appellant says, well, the officer should have inquired further before searching, but there's no law that says you have to ask a driver, hey, are those illegal drugs in your car? The answer to that's fairly predictable. And so presumably under appellant's argument, if the driver says, well, no, those aren't illegal drugs, then you just have to let them drive away. That's not the law. The law is look at the totality of the circumstances. We have got four of them here. Yes, perhaps the bag of suspected marijuana could have been hemp, but certainty has never been required under the probable cause standard. Judge Austin does a good job of laying out the case law involving testing of drugs. And again, a bag of powder could always be something besides cocaine. A gun could always be a toy gun. That doesn't mean you don't have probable cause. The other case I cite in—
Or perhaps someone has a permit.
Right. And the Supreme Court rejected that argument, I think, in Timberlake, that the mere fact that there could be a permit means the officers can't do something. Also, I've cited in my supplemental authority letter a case that says paint fumes are enough to search a car. Well, paint is certainly legal, unlike the substance that might have been marijuana, might have been hemp. Paint's legal, but paint fumes are enough. So if paint fumes are enough, then marijuana odor certainly should be enough. Much less the sight of what looks like marijuana. So when you look at all those circumstances together and you look at Judge Awesome's detailed order carefully, Judge Awesome didn't err here, but this court shouldn't even reach that issue. It should follow precedent. It should not overturn precedent, as appellant repeatedly asked you to do in the brief. And if Torgerson overturns precedent, then we'll be back. And with 13 seconds left, I think that's all I have, unless this court has questions.
Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Regas. Ms. Ireland, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. As to Judge Smith's question about the factual record of the Rasmussen hearing, I believe I misspoke. The pill bottle was not found on the front side, the front of the vehicle. It was found the rear right side of the car near the feet of the passenger.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Of course. I do want to address my request in my brief to overturn Thiel. And that really comes from a place of a need for clarity. I ask that this court should overturn Thiel. Obviously, in Torgerson, this court did not and still was able to proceed with resolving the case. So I think it is a good course of action because litigants, courts, officers seem to be, and understandably and fairly, confused about what are the legal implications of our semi-legalization landscape that we live in now. I can go home today and go buy some cannabis, and that is perfectly legal. That is a significant.
But, I mean, you agree that both Grissom and I think Judge Awesome's order cites two authorities that that conclude the legality, the ultimate legality, or the ultimate nature or quantity of the substance doesn't negate probable cause.
I'm not following your question. Can you restate it?
How do you respond to, like, McGrath? right? Or another case is that I think that Grissom cites McGrath. I think there are other cases, even the ones in Judge Awesome's order, that point to, you know, since whatever, 1976 or something like that, we've had, we only criminalize a certain quantity. And so the argument is you don't know quantity based on smell. And so it could be legal, it could be illegal, you don't know. And our cases have held that's not enough to negate probable cause. Seems like we're presented with a similar question here about the possibility of legality or illegality, and probable cause is a pretty low standard. So why can't we just make that same conclusion here?
If I understand your question correctly, under the current law, I don't think it's appropriate that, I don't think it's a reasonable assumption or leap of speculation to say that because it appears to be some cannabis, therefore I'm going to assume it's illegal cannabis. I think it's a very different scenario when you're talking about the prior marijuana laws, where marijuana was defined by law as any and all cannabis, all parts of cannabis, all types of cannabis. It is a very different situation now where some cannabis is perfectly legal and no longer considered marijuana as a matter of law. So that is not to say that the presence of cannabis should be ignored by an officer. I think if an officer under the current law, which means that cannabis is illegal if it has high levels of THC, but it is perfectly legal if it has low THC, an officer can take into consideration what they are observing, the nature of the odors they're observing, the products in the car. And those circumstances could give rise to a suspicion to intrude further and expand the scope of the car. My argument is that, particularly with the new laws where some cannabis is legal, just the mere presence of cannabis can't establish probable cause. There needs to be something in addition, indicia of use, indicia of sale, or inculpatory statements by the driver. We see those frequently in traffic stops. You know, statements where the driver is saying what they have in their car. Sometimes it's inculpatory, sometimes it's exculpatory. So to respondent's point that what's the officer supposed to do, just drive away? No, the officer can take those observations into consideration, but under the new laws, that is not enough for probable cause. So that is the bulk of my argument. And if this court doesn't feel it's appropriate to overturn Thiel in light of the change of law, or to judge Brian's point, perhaps just has a different understanding of whether Thiel is presents such a bright line rule, well, then this court can simply decline to follow Thiel to the extent that it creates this rule that applied to the prior abrogated marijuana laws. I would note the Schultz case that respondent talked about. Now, that case is a 1976 Minnesota Supreme Court case that said that because there was marijuana odor, it was an odor case, there was probable cause. The court there relied exclusively on Wicklund, which is noted in Westlaw as superseded by statute. And it also talked about how Thiel rests on Shinzing, which the Minnesota Supreme Court has said that does not support any kind of bright line rule. So I think there is reason for clarity. I think this court should make a statement that is clear to the parties that cannabis alone does not establish probable cause and the totality of the circumstances controls. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments today. The case is submitted. We'll have a decision out in a statutory time period.